White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 483.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! And welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com. And of course, as always, John, by people like you, not you, John, but the folks out there who keep our programs going, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family. They are our Patreon.com family. I'm, as probably you've guessed by now, Van Allen Plexico, and I am joined as always by my co-host, because it's the law.
I'm John Ringer.
John.
And it is the law.
It is the law. That's absolutely, absolutely right. And so here we are. We had to come back. We kind of took last Monday off, and I posted the Evergreen Classic match game episode. It's like the second time I've reposted it, but honestly, I put so much work into preparing that episode. I need to milk it for all I can ever get out of it. I'll probably post it again in a couple of years. So maybe on its 10th anniversary, I'll repost it.
It's a great episode and maybe the funnest episode for me to ever do.
Well, we had some great
game show.
Yeah, we had some great folks that were like the celebrity guests and everything, and it really went pretty well. So I had the brilliant idea that I knew it would be impossible to have all those people on Skype or whatever at the same time, or Zoom. Back in 2015, I hadn't even figured out how to get two people on. And so what I did was I got them all to send me their audio answers in advance, and I put them on the soundboard, on a separate page on the soundboard, so that when I needed the answer from, like, Reynolds, I would just hit Reynolds' button, and it would play, you know, his answer for question number two or his answer for question number three. So it was fun, but, man, it wasn't as much work as editing we believed, but it was almost. So, speaking of which, we got to get episode, we've recorded episode 9 about the Gus Malzahn era, and I will be getting that one in the editing bay soon. It'll probably take me about a month to get it completely edited. I'll probably get that one together come September, October, depending on what's going on. Because, you know, we're coming up on what is usually my busiest and most fun time of the year, and let me get your reaction to this, John. I was just telling Amy about this yesterday. I just mentioned this to her. I said, you know, and this is all the health problems of the COVID thing aside, right? I mean, obviously, that's the first and foremost thing. I don't want to make light of it. But all of that aside for just a second, in terms of how it impacts our entertainment and our daily, you know, things that we like to do, all it has cost me so far is the NCAA basketball tournament, the SEC basketball tournament, and it pushed racing back a couple of months. That's all it's really cost me in terms of entertainment and activities so far.
Movie theaters.
Yeah, and you're right, and movie theaters. Yeah, two or three movies I probably would have gone to the theater and going to Barnes & Noble just to hang out. But we are about to hit the point where it absolutely obliterates everything I love in life, because we have, you know, you at this time of the year, usually an extremely within the space of about 10 days, we get the IndyCar race in St. Louis, right up here north of my house that I like to go to. And I've already paid for my tickets, and they haven't said yet what's going to happen with that. And then turn right around and go to Dragon Con, and then have the football season start, usually that weekend. And all those things are in jeopardy, if not already gone. Dragon Con's already canceled. It's going to be entirely online. The football season is what we're going to be talking about tonight a little bit, and I'm waiting to hear about the race. So, yeah, the end of August, beginning of September is my Christmas and New Year and birthday all rolled into one, and I'm about to get down in the dumps about it all when I realize it's all kind of screwed up this year. So, oh boy.
I'm sorry, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so let's see. We've got a few things to talk about. How are you doing? Let the folks know how are things going in Northern Virginia, John?
It's Central Virginia.
Yeah, that's right. I forget. You're in Central. Yeah, around Richmond.
Good. We're doing okay. Doing the best we can, like everybody else, you know. trying to stay safe and, you know, hang around the house, mostly at work, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. We start back to on-campus classes in a couple of weeks, so I'm curious to see how that's going to play out, because our area of Illinois has now elevated right to the verge of going back into the bunker. We've gotten that bad. Mm-hmm. So we're really kind of waiting to see what the governor's going to do in the next few days, because right now we're planning on being back in the classroom with limited, you know, like half the class come in one day and half come in the next. But we'll see, you know. So, well, anyway, we certainly have some Auburn stuff, some SEC stuff, and some college football in general, maybe stuff to talk about, and maybe some basketball a little bit, I think. Didn't we have a note about basketball on here maybe? So let's dig right on into it, and as you suggested earlier, we'll kind of do the rapid fire. But before we do, is there anything going on that we need to address? I'm trying to think. I feel like one topic people have been talking about is that Alan Green, the athletic director, sent out an email saying something to the effect of they're trying to figure out people that paid for their season tickets and have to pay that extra amount of money, are they going to get that back or roll it over? Or is it just too necessary and they're going to keep it regardless whether they play football or not? Have you been hearing about this?
Sure. Every athletic department's facing that same decision.
Yeah.
And that's a big reason they need to try to play some games so they can justify keeping that money.
Yes, that's a good point. I know we think so much of it is, you know, they need the money from ESPN and CBS or ABC or whoever, but there's also the money from the fans and the donors and the alumni and everything.
And it's not just the popcorn or the ticket price, it's the donation you make to get the ticket location.
Yes, that's right.
All of that.
That's right. So there's a lot of factors at work here. There was also some, yeah. Also, I was talking to John Carvalho in the journalism department about this yesterday briefly. That apparently, there's uprising among the faculty at Auburn now because, you know, they've been basically told we're kind of dealing with the same thing here at my college, which is that administration wants to do things as much as possible in the classroom to make the students happy, you know. But the faculty's like, I don't know if I really want to go stand in front of hundreds of young people every day and have them coughing and sneezing in my direction, because I get everything those people have every day, every year already. You know, now I'm really nervous. So, you know, in fact, I'm pretty sure I had, you know, COVID back in January, and the more I think about it, it would be kind of strange if I didn't, because of having so many people I'm interacting with all the time, every day, from all over Metro St. Louis, you know. So, it's Auburn's going through that. Probably every college, every school in the country is going through that. We're wondering what our little girl's going to do, you know, what Mira's going to do in terms of school. What's it looking like with your crowd in terms of, well, they're older, but most of them.
But I mean, the high schools are where I am are going to go online at least the first 9 weeks, and then see. Universities in Virginia, you know, they're trying to go back in person, but it's going to be a mix. I mean, like, yeah, larger classes, lecture classes are definitely going to be online, and smaller classes they may try and have them in person, but just space them by further apart. But, you know, gets into some of the Auburn stuff, like, how do you have a dorm? Like, what do you, how do you do that? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, that's part of it for us too. Usually I have up to 36 students. They've capped it at 24 for the fall, and we're going to have like no more than like 12 Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays, and or like if they meet Monday, Wednesday, or Tuesday, Thursday, 12 on Monday, 12 on Wednesday, you know, that kind of thing. So, and the others online. But of course, the thing for me is that means I'm basically teaching 8 in-person classes, and I'm basically teaching 8 online classes all at the same time. I'm basically teaching 16 classes, so this is not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. And, you know, meanwhile, doing it all wearing a mask, hiding behind a plexiglass shield, and trying not to get killed, basically, not die. So, anyway, other people have it much worse than me, so I'm not complaining so much as just I'm concerned. And, sure. And I'm, by the way, this is kind of odd. The Palatial White Rocket Studios, our windows in the Palatial Studios overlook my yard from lower down, like basement level, and Mira keeps running by. I don't know what's going on, but I keep seeing Mira's legs running by both of my windows, and she just bent down and looked in, so I'm sure she's very excited to see the great the drama that's unfolding on the AU Wishbone right now. Speaking of which, all right, so let's get to news and notes. The Alabama fans were so excited this past week because once again the NCAA said, "Oh, Nick, are you mad about something? Well, let's change the rules for you." How did that play out?
Well, of course, anytime Auburn loses to Alabama, Alabama loses to Auburn, it's not because Auburn was better. It's because there was a glaring deficiency in the rules that must be corrected. And so Nick Saban again whined about the end of the first half and the stopping the clock to determine if, you know, there was, you know, where the ball was and allowing Auburn to set up for the field goal, that whole thing. And so they have changed that rule, and we can name that whatever the third annual Nick Saban sad rules change.
That's where Nick goes to the NCAA and says,
"I don't have facts to back this up,
but I need you to change this rule." Where in fact we should say to Nick,
"Blame yourself."
That's right. Oh, by the way, I saw Herman Cain I heard Herman is hospitalized. The man who spoke those two quotes for us is currently in the hospital with COVID. I hope he gets better soon. He's provided me much delight over the years with those two audio quotes. I don't want him to feel bad, poor man. So yeah, we saw that they changed those two things, and I some Alabama fan tweeted about now Auburn won't keep winning with these weird luck plays, to which I replied, weird luck like knowing how to count to 11, you know, weird luck like putting a return man back on a 55-yard field goal, all that weird luck like running over your safety with a 4-foot running back, you know, knocking, decapitating him, all that kind of weird luck, yeah. So, but anyway, what's going on with the SEC meetings? What do we know?
They're meeting later this week. They had set a wall. They want to make a decision in late July, which is this point.
Running out.
So I think you know, they probably have some options on the table, and they're going to vote at the end of this week. But it may just be, keep moving forward and be prepared to delay or change. But I think I'm sure that their big thing is they're looking at schedule scenarios. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about later.
Yeah.
The NCAA itself meets on August 4th. And they're going to vote on championships for fall sports. So not football, but the other, because that's not an NCAA event, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Playoff is
weirdly
an NCAA event, the same way that March Madness is. But the other fall sports that, you know, are competed in the NCAA, they have championships. And the NCAA is considering canceling them in the same way they did the ones in the spring. So I think that may happen. And that would be a big thing for football to then have to deal with in terms of making their decisions.
Yeah, it's not in our lifetime, but I just feel like the day is coming where the NCAA creates like its own playoff for top level college football, and turns the existing thing into like the NIT by default almost. They'll be like, you can still go to the Rose Bowl. It'll just be like being in the NIT. I don't know. I don't have facts to back that up, but I just feel like the day is coming when we get an NCAA college football playoff. I've never quite understood why they don't have control over it compared to every other sport in the world that they do.
But I think it might be the other way, where the big conferences break off and they have their own playoff. It's not anything to do with the NCAA. And if the NCAA has a playoff, it's kind of everybody else.
Yeah, well.
Not the big conferences.
Could kind of split in both directions. Interesting. What's going on with the football team right now?
So we're past the weightlifting period. We're into basically like OTAs, off-season training things, where it's not fall practice, but it's not just weightlifting and running sprints. The coaches can do some stuff with the players a little bit of time. The players can do the thing where the quarterback, gets the receivers out there and they're throwing the ball around and that kind of stuff. So it's more football, but it's not full practice.
Should we be concerned the offensive line hasn't had any chance to work together really like in actual football, or that that they haven't had a lot of experience yet in actually using our new offensive coordinator's system or anything like that? I mean, how worried should we be about that?
The offensive line, we'll get to that later, but yes, I think that one. In terms of the other stuff, I think his system is similar enough to Gus's that – and again, like in terms of the – you know, the quarterback and the receivers, they've known about the system since the spring, so I think they've had plenty of time to work through that stuff. So
yeah, well, I just feel like this season, more than any other season probably in college football history, at least in our lifetimes for sure, is, if they play it, is going to come down to the teams that have the most seniors that have played together the most, because they'll need the least practice. They need the least orientation with each other, and that's what they'll get. You know, it's like, it's kind of like every time the NFL used to have a strike and they'd only play a short season, the Redskins would always win the Super Bowl, because it was kind of like, you know, under Gibbs, they had like the same players, the same system every year. And so they knew exactly what to do. They'd come back for a seven-game season, and it was like they'd never been away compared to other teams. And so it'd be kind of like, I guess, the Patriots or something nowadays. And so I feel like in the same way, it benefits teams that are comfortable playing together already. And I'm afraid, at least especially in terms of the offensive line, that ain't us. You know, last year's team would have been a great team to come back from to play like a six-game season or something, because they'd have known exactly what, other than Knicks, you know, they'd have known exactly what they were doing. But and that defense, man. But yeah, so I don't know. I feel like we are a team that needs to be on the field as much as possible, getting as much experience as we can, and this year is just totally running against that.
It's true. Yeah. If we don't get those, cupcake game or two to warm up. Get the offensive line kinks out.
That's right. That's right. Just being around each other normally. You know, they're not even able to be around each other as much and just get that personal chemistry going that you really got to have. You know, the best teams aren't always the most athletic or the most five stars. Sometimes it's the ones that just their personalities mesh, you know, on and off the field, and they're best buddies and they're just tight, you know, and they'll fight and die for each other. And that's something you can't do over Zoom, you know. That's takes, you know, being around each other all the time, and it just, I don't know. I mean, I understand that's just how it is, but I just feel like that's the situation we're in, is that teams that already have that in the key places are just going to be miles ahead when football ever does start of teams that are just starting to learn each other in like October or something, you know. So we'll see. You had a note here about people, quote, rooting against football happening, unquote. What? I don't know the context here, so help me out.
It's just I wrote that before things happened on the media today. Like, there's just a running thing where people think if we talk about the virus and its impact on the football season or potential impacts, that you're rooting against football. And
no.
It's a thing.
That's like saying, you know, I'm very concerned about that hurricane that's bearing down on us. Oh, you just want us to get destroyed by the hurricane. No, quite the opposite, you know.
You're pro-hurricane.
Oh, please. Oh, man. If that's a thing, it's a stupid thing, and I'm glad we were able to address that. Moving on. Yeah, okay, so you also had a note here. I look at your notes to see what we want to talk about, because you have good notes. Mine are kind of dumb coming up, but you asked the question, when is an outbreak an outbreak, right? Like having the bubble and no bubble. Again, sometimes your notes are awesome, and sometimes they're rather opaque to me, so I have to say, John, what the heck did you mean by that? So what are you talking about, an outbreak and the bubble and everything?
Well, so again, there's pro sports are coming back, and I think this is something that college football can learn from, and learn a lot of lessons from, to whether college football can work or not. Major League Baseball is back playing now. Mm-hmm. The NBA is coming back this weekend.
Wait.
The NBA.
Please clap.
Okay. that was necessary.
The NBA is literally in a bubble. The players are living in hotels in Orlando and isolated from everybody else, basically cut off from the outside world, and playing games like at gyms or whatever inside the bubble with no fans.
That's what Formula One's doing too.
Yeah. I think that is controllable. And yeah. I think in those sports have an enormous amount of money and infrastructure too.
Right.
And I think, they do it right that way, it's very possible they can both succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Formula One, they had a race. They had no races for months. They had a race in Austria with no fans. Then they all just hung around Austria for a week and had another race in Austria with no fans on the same track, same direction and everything. And then they crossed over the Danube, I believe, and had one in Hungary with no fans. So they're just kind of like in this tight little circle around Austria-Hungary, having race after race. And IndyCar kind of did that. You know, I don't know if you guys know, here's the thing with IndyCar right now. They had a couple of races in Iowa, I believe, yeah, and a couple of races in mid-Ohio, and in very controlled situations. They did allow fans, but they were socially distanced fans. And they're going to spend the entire month of August pretending it's May. And they're going to have the Indy 500 in a couple of weeks. The full-blown Indy 500. But every couple of days, they come out and say, well, we're only going to have half the fans. And they say, well, we're only going to have a quarter of the fans. So I'm waiting for them to say, we'll have five guys sitting in the stands 30 feet apart, and that will be our audience. But we're going to have this race, you know. So it's like racing, though, is not a contact sport in the sense of on the field, so to speak, right? There, with that, you're having to, like you're saying with the basketball players, you're just having to control where they socialize. And so there was an incident where where there were two drivers that actually went back home to Monaco while they were in Austria. And I guess they flew their Learjets or whatever back to Monaco. One of them got in trouble and got a huge fine. The other one didn't, because one of them allowed himself to get photographed on social media out partying in Monaco when they were on lockdown in Austria. But the other one did not let himself get photographed, so there was no proof he had done anything but just go back to his apartment for the weekend. So the moral is, don't be photographed and posted and tweeted and Instagrammed if you're going to, you know, take your Learjet to Monaco, John. Come on.
The exact same thing happened in the NBA bubble this week. A guy got out for some family emergency or whatever and then was photographed at a strip club in Atlanta.
That's a family emergency, right? I get that.
But I think – so the point of this was Major League Baseball, not in a bubble. They've had Major League Baseball for 4 days, and now the Marlins have an outbreak. I think they've got 12 people diagnosed positive right now, team and staff. Jeez. They had like four or five people tested positive Sunday morning, and the team voted to play anyway. And nobody told them this is a bad idea, and they went in there and played the Phillies on Sunday. So, and now like they can't get on their jet and do their charter jet, fly to the next city or fly home or whatever. They're stuck in Philadelphia, and I think they're going to end up having to take a bus to their next town, and they'll see if they can scrape up enough people to play. So.
You know, I was saying a while ago, there are worse places to be stuck than Orlando, and I think Philadelphia would definitely be one of them.
There you go.
All right, something you said there raised a question for me. So the guy went to a strip club in Atlanta. Are they wearing masks? I've got to know.
I'm not going there.
I got to know if the strippers are wearing if they take it all off or they leave their mask on and take everything else off. I don't know. I don't know these things. Anyway, all right.
So the point of this was...
yes, please get us back on point.
...is more like Major League Baseball, and that they will not be in a bubble. They'll be traveling. They'll be going to the outside world and that kind of stuff. And they're much more likely to get it, spread it to each other than like the Formula One or the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah, and
that's the danger piece. But also the biggest one is that Major League Baseball did not have a set plan or rule. If multiple people get it on a team in a certain day, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And the players are always going to say, let us play. That can't be the answer. It has to be, this is dangerous. You might spread it to the other team. We're going to cancel this one game and isolate you. Got the people who are sick from everybody else and try and keep going.
Yeah.
So
well,
college football has to have that. The SEC, and there's no czar of college football, as we know. So it has
exactly.
to be the SEC has to make that rule and say, this is the rule.
That's the thing. It's we've talked about this before. It's just so decentralized. And it's just, there are times that's, you know, good. And there are times that really is kind of a problem. And this is certainly one of the times when it really has proven to be a problem. So. Name, image, and likeness. Is that, I mean, that's kind of a off on the side burner right now, but it's still in the works, right?
Well, I think, you know, we were talking about it today, just because it's coming, And if we didn't have all these other things going on in the world, this would be a much huger deal, much bigger deal. And it really is coming. And there were two safety recruits who committed to Miami over the last week or 10 days or whatever, and mentioned that Miami had done a presentation for them about how they could make more money from name, image, and likeness there.
Well, leave it to Miami to figure that out.
But all colleges are thinking about this. They're all thinking about this. They're all analyzing it. So I'm just going to – we don't have enough time to get into that whole thing tonight. But right. In a future episode, I'll do some research about what the rule actually is, and then we can kind of talk through what it actually means for Auburn. But I want to throw this out there right now, okay? Name, image, and likeness goes into effect tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
We call KJ Britt at our DMM or whatever and say, we'll give you $50 to record the intro to our podcast. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm down.
Or just promote it, you know, retweet it and that kind of stuff.
That's a responsible use of our Patreon money, no doubt about it. I think our patrons would unanimously approve of using the money to pay the players. Absolutely. Man, the Alabama websites are going to be launching Patreons out the wazoo to pay their players, you know, like they've done already. And I'm just trying to now I'm imagining that the Hurricanes have a PowerPoint, you know, down here in South Florida, our strippers don't wear masks. That's got to be a selling point for Miami. You know it. You know Miami. Come on. Come on now. Come on.
Come on. Come on, man.
You know it. That's what Miami advertises. That's Miami in through and through. All right. I want to talk for a second about the magazines, right? We talked before about having to run out and buy the magazines. And honestly, they feel more like quote-unquote fantasy football magazines this year even than usual. I mean, you know, usually there's three kinds of football magazines, John. There's the NFL preview. There's the college preview. And there's the fantasy football magazines. And then, of course, there's also Phil Steele, which is like another planet. It's basically when you wake up at 2:00 in the morning and you know you can't go back to sleep if you don't find out how NC State did on artificial turf at night in that game against Baylor in 1973. You know, that's what Phil Steele comes through. He comes through like a champion for that, you know. But the other three types, though, man, the regular college magazine feels like fantasy football right now. I bought it knowing that everything in it or a substantial portion of what's in it could end up being, you know, ephemeral, could be gone with the wind. But I wanted to talk for a second about how I made my purchasing choice, and I want to see what you think about that and what our listeners think. So I had on the shelf at the Schnucks in Belleville today, I had two... Schnucks grocery store. Yes, okay. Schnucks is like our Kroger, and Deerberg is like our Publix. And since Deerberg's is further away and more expensive, so I just tooled up to Schnucks right up in Belleville. I had to adjust all this. What? When did I move up here? 14 years ago? Yeah, I had to adjust to these strange things 14 years ago. I'm used to it now. So anyway, I had two options on the shelf because, you know, they always have like the Big Ten option and then like the national option. We don't get the SEC option. Well, we get it a little bit now because of Missouri. See, this is another reason I'm actually grateful for Missouri. I know I'm the only person in the entire SEC fan base that likes Missouri being in the SEC. I'm well aware of that, but I love it because A, I get Auburn up here once every 12 freaking years, fix the schedule, and B, even though it has some dumb Missouri player on the cover, I get the chance to buy an SEC magazine. So anyway, I picked Street and Smith's College Football, which has got the Georgia quarterback that went to Ohio State, Justin Fields. Yeah.
Justin Fields.
It's got him on the cover in his Ohio State uniform. It also has a bunch of stuff about Notre Dame because it's up here. We've got to have Notre Dame and Ohio State on the cover. But I picked it because they list their top 10 on the front, and Auburn is number 9. The other one, I think it was this is Street Smith. I don't think they had an Athlon. I think it was Lindy's. It didn't have Auburn in the top 10. And I'm like, all right, I'm spending my money based on how these magazines rank Auburn, and I'm picking the one that picked us number 9. Now, here is my question. By me purchasing the one that ranked Auburn the highest, and has Auburn in the top 10, am I rewarding bad journalism? In other words, am I telling them, you keep ranking my team highly no matter what reality actually says, and I'll keep giving you my money? Now, and I also want to know, because some magazine, I mean, is it that some magazines rank a team by how good they actually think the squad is? We've had this conversation before, right? There's you and I know about this, right? There's two ways that you can rank a team, a college football team. One is objectively, here's how good I think they are, and the other is, here's how I think they're going to play out in one loss record against their schedule. You know, an example would be, you know, the example I always think of is 1984 Auburn, right? Auburn was ranked number one or number two in the preseason that year, and they lost their first two games, and they were still in the top 25. You know, there's not many times in history that a team has started 0-2 and still been ranked in the top 25. It's not very many. But that's because people looked at the schedule and said, you know, they were good enough that even though they played Miami and Texas in their first two games, good Lord, they played them both within a score, and they were really a good team, you know. And so, you know, if you ranked purely by record, you wouldn't have Auburn anywhere near the top 10, at the top 25 at that point, because they're 0-2. But if you look at the objective quality of the football team, of course you would, because they played two really, really tough teams and only lost by one score each. So what I'm getting at is, How should I treat my magazines? Should I reward them for ranking Auburn highly, or should I reward them because I think they're being honest and evaluating us fairly? Do you see what I'm saying? What do you think?
I'll always go for the honest evaluation end of it.
Okay.
More objective, that side of it. But what you're talking about is how good are they, but versus
who they play.
Predicting what the final record would be based on who they play.
Yes.
Therefore, what their final record will be, and therefore what. So it's your choice is either a power ranking.
Yes.
Or a ranking of a prediction of what the final records will be based on who they play.
Yes. That's correct. Yeah, that kind of gets at the idea of the power ranking versus the record ranking. Like if Auburn had played in the ACC last year, we'd have probably been 11-1 or something, and we'd have been higher ranked than we were. Whereas playing in the SEC West, we were 9-4. This gets me to my other point. Gerald Ford ain't played nobody, John.
What?
If you compare this analogously, if that's a word, to like, let's say you're going to rank presidents on how good of a crisis manager they are. So let's say you compared Abraham Lincoln or Franklin Roosevelt to Gerald Ford and Bill Clinton, okay? Abraham Lincoln had to deal with a civil freaking war, okay? So he played a really tough schedule. If he was if Abraham Lincoln was a football team, he played Alabama and Clemson and LSU, right, when he had to deal with the Civil War. Franklin Roosevelt had to deal with the Great Depression and World War II. So basically, Franklin Roosevelt had to go to Ohio State, and then he had to play like LSU or Florida, you know, or Georgia, something like that. So they played a tough schedule. Gerald Ford, what did he was president for 2.5 years. What did he have to do? He did the bicentennial, and he slipped down the steps of his airplane once or twice, right? That's it. And he had Chevy Chase.
Make fun of him on Saturday Night Live.
Chevy Chase, yes. Chevy Chase made fun of him. All right, that's tough. That's Louisiana Monroe right there, man. Come on, that's Wake Forest. Bill Clinton, all right, Bill Clinton's crisis management consisted of his own crises, right? I mean, like, He's more like he didn't have a tough schedule, but he kept crashing the bus into the side of the stadium on the way into the game. So they had like golden eras for their to deal with. But I had to correct myself, because as soon as I said Ford didn't play anybody, and get this, the one tough game he had was against Jimmy Carter and he lost. And I'm like, that's like losing to Northeastern Louisiana presidents when you lose to Jimmy Carter. For the presidency, you're Michigan and they're Appalachian State, man, and you just, and if it's Gerald Ford, that Michigan is a fair comparison, because he was the center for Michigan. He's like an All-American center for Michigan. I tweeted this the other day. But here's the thing. Gerald Ford beat Ronald Reagan in the 76 Republican primaries. And I noted that's kind of like Wake Forest, or in his case, Michigan, knocking off Clemson or Alabama early in the season, right? So I guess Ford did play somebody, and I withdraw the motion. So there you go. There's my little trip through presidential politics and college football. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Please clap.
All right. So you want to get into some talk about the schedule, if you can think now, right? If you can get that.
I just want to take a moment and just all appreciate that rant and me not saying anything about it. I appreciate that, Vannett. But again, you left a lot of presidents out, and I want you to go back and do some more research on some of the.
Okay. I can break them down like they're the SEC East and West, man. That's not a problem. I can do this. I'm on it. We will do it.
Okay.
So you want to talk?
So we don't have to go super deep into this. What I want to talk about is, let's say you and I, that Greg Sankey comes to us, okay?
That happens.
It says.
It could happen.
It could happen. It says, you are knowledgeable SEC fans. Mm-hmm. Please give us some options that we should consider for the schedule. What should be on the table?
All right. Well, the first thing that comes to my mind, let's throw this out real quick. First thing that comes to my mind is, and we talked about this a little bit in the past, do you want to do the two options? Well, there's three. Okay. There's three options.
There's lots of options.
I know. The three that come to my mind immediately, I'm turning into the Spanish Inquisition. I know that. I need to get them on the soundboard. I apologize. The three options that come immediately to mind, one is the schedule the way it stands, right? All 12 games, don't change anything. I don't know if that's possible. But that's like the easiest option is just play it the way it is, and I don't think that's going to happen. Second option is conference only, and the SEC would only play 8 games, which is like the third option is kind of like option 2A or 2B, which is 8+1, where you play one other major conference team, which is mostly going to be the ACC because half the SEC has rivalries with the ACC and other teams are playing them anyway, like us playing North Carolina. Those are three options that come most to my mind. What am I missing?
Okay. Within that, we got to think about some other things, right?
All right.
We need to have flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have some potential open dates if we have to reschedule stuff.
Yeah, you're right.
I've said before, there's some concern about, you know, post-Thanksgiving, you know, kind of a late fall wave with the virus.
Yep. It likes turkey.
Go ahead.
I said it likes turkey. It comes surging back.
It's not an issue for the SEC so much, but for other conferences, for the ACC for sure, that there are some states that are putting in travel restrictions on people from other states.
That's a good point.
And we're not going to have any, like you said earlier, none of the small school games, and they get all that stuff's coming out.
Alcorn State's gone, right? I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah. No, it's 100% not going
to
happen.
If we're going to play 12 games, we have to find a different team just to have 12.
Well, right. And so that's why I think, like, the 12 game, the original schedule was never going to happen.
Yes.
Because a lot of the smaller schools are not playing. So, you know, your only options, I think, are to, you know, keep the big teams on the schedule, so like the 8+1 kind of scenario. And then for teams that don't have a big conference replacement, like Alabama lost Southern Cal as its opener, you find another matchup with them with an ACC or Big 12 team. I know Alabama's talked to BYU, whatever, but because BYU's schedule got wiped out. The conference only keep the current. Okay, so but again, here's the you need to think creatively now. We in this podcast are famous for thinking outside the box.
We don't recognize the box exists.
That's right. There is no box. Okay,
there is no box.
Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Auburn plays the same teams they play, but we shake up the order.
Okay. All right.
The dates don't matter anymore. We need to have enough dates to get us through the season, but leave some open dates in there to potentially reschedule. What if we did all the division games first?
Ooh.
It's a trap.
So start out with the Mississippis and work our way up to LSU and Alabama?
Yes.
Woo. Woo.
And like literally, you know, whatever, that'd be game mid-season or whatever, be hitting that.
So, in other words, you're like categorizing most important games, next most important set of games, and then like tertiary games. Like, so in other words, get the most important ones in so that one way or another there's an Iron Bowl. And then if that all plays out, then you can have Auburn, Georgia, and Alabama, Tennessee. And then if that all plays out and there are dates left, you can do Auburn, North Carolina, Florida, Florida State. Is that kind of where you're going with this?
It is, and because, again, that we'd know who the winner of the West would be. And if we had to shut it all down, wouldn't you rather have played those games than who's Auburn's other opponent from the East this year? I've already blanked that on it.
Kentucky, maybe?
So, I mean, again, wouldn't you rather have played some of the West teams than Kentucky if we have to pick one?
I'll be honest with you right now. I have not been thrilled with our schedule this year because you and I have said it before. You know, if you're going to lose, you'd rather lose to a big name than a little name.
Yep.
And I look at North Carolina and Kentucky, those are winnable games. They're also losable games. But they're those kind of games that you lose and you don't get any credit for losing. You know, if we had lost to Oregon last year, people have been like, oh, well, they lost to an almost undefeated Oregon team. You know, there's no shame in that. If we lose to North Carolina, there are going to be some people that say, oh, you know, North Carolina's on the come. They're rising up. But most people are going to be like, Auburn lost to North Carolina, basketball school, you know. And if we lost to Kentucky, they're really going to say that. So, you know, because not everybody realizes that, you know, not everybody pays as much attention as we and some do and realize that, you know, it's that same thing we always do. We schedule teams when they're crap, and by the time we play them, they're like the best team in the country. It's happened over and over and over to us, and it's kind of happening again. So with North Carolina, so I have no problem not playing either one of those games this year. I'm not scared of them. I don't want to go out of my way to play a game that really doesn't, you know, if we win it, everybody goes, oh, Auburn beat Kentucky, whoop-de-woo. And if we lose, which is entirely possible, everybody goes, Auburn lost to Kentucky, blah, you know. if I'm going to lose, I'd rather lose to LSU than Kentucky. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
I don't want to lose any, but let's be realistic, right? So,
but it's, again, it's also a prioritization because of what you said, like, if there's a chance that things get canceled, what games do you really want to happen?
Yeah.
If you could only have four or five games happen, what games would you want to happen? I mean, would North Carolina, Kentucky be in that boat?
No. If I could only have four or five games, then that's going to be my biggest rivals. But you also, you run the risk of going 0-4. You know, you kind of like to schedule a winnable game in there somewhere, right? I mean, I don't want my schedule to be LSU, Georgia, Alabama. Those are games I want to watch, and I'm not scared. I'm just, that just seems like low percentage. You know what I mean?
I hear you. That's Auburn's life, I guess.
It is. Do you want Gus to go down as the only Auburn coach to lose every game, 0-3? No.
Mm. So, but I mean, like, I think the Big Ten, if they play, may seriously do this. I think they may go to division games first.
Hmm. That's an interesting idea.
But, I mean, I think, you know, I think there's a lot of contingency plans, and I think this kind of thing that we're talking about, the having the open mind and the flexibility about the game may not happen the date you think it happens.
Yeah.
We have to be open to that.
Just kind of a liquid schedule then, right?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting how TV would have to say, you know, stay tuned Saturday for a really big game, and we'll see what it is. We don't really know. I mean, we don't know which game we're going to show you. We don't know who's playing yet.
Well, but like, and they may know, but then one of those big games maybe that has to get canceled, right?
Yeah.
So then they shift the schedule. So the TV, it could be a fluid situation, and I think, you know, and I think conferences may say, okay, we're canceling this game. We're going to try to make it up in a month.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled Alabama LSU game for the following Ole Miss Tulane game. We know that you've taken off of work on a Saturday and you're at home to watch Alabama LSU, but we won't be showing you that game today. We're going to be showing you Ole Miss Tulane, or I guess Ole Miss Mississippi State. Actually, I was just telling my wife a while ago, I'm like, you know, one thing that really is driving me crazy is that in addition to the games I want to see with my team, you know, I was all excited to see Ole Miss and Mississippi State this year. I was looking forward to that. You know, that has the potential. Talk about high risk, high reward. Those two two coaches at those two programs, you know, that's like nitroglycerin in the old wagon on the wagon trail bouncing along. I mean, it could blow up good or it could blow up bad, and I wanted to watch it blow up.
Oh yeah, no, again, this is one of the things that gets lost because all the stuff kind of like the Lane Kiffin thing is fascinating.
Yeah, and I don't want to be deprived of that.
Mm-hmm. And we got those two and a new coach at Arkansas too, so that part was all going to be fun.
Arkansas, yeah, you know, but okay. So you also had a note here about pods.
Again, just a plug for if we ever redo the SEC schedule from scratch, pods
please,
are
Lord.
The way to go.
Please.
Forget divisions. You get a few permanent opponents, and then you rotate around, so we play like everybody every other year, basically.
And I say you!
Please clap.
I've used that three times now in this show. It's just been a please clap kind of night, which is good, I guess. I want pods so bad. And if for the folks that don't know what that is, that's like when the teams, you take the SEC and you divide them up into a little, instead of two big divisions, you have several smaller pods, but it lets you rotate around better. You still play the ones you really want to play, but you don't come to Missouri once every 12 freaking years.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn would have like three permanent opponents and everybody else would be rotating. Right.
But they rotate so quickly that it's not like, you know, you never play them.
Because you'd have like three permanent opponents and five rotating opponents or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, with five rotating opponents, you're going to get the rest of the conference pretty fast.
You're going to get them all twice in 4 years. That's because that's 5 and 5 is 10, plus you and your other three is 14. Yeah, that's the way you do it. That's absolutely.
Every guy will get to play against every other, you know, team in the course of their career.
Home and away.
That's right.
Home and away. Yes, that's right. I would only have to wait. You know, I would get to see Auburn at Missouri every 4 years at worst instead of every 12. Please, Lord, go to pods. Well, the only reason we have two divisions is because Kramer figured out a loophole to sneak it past the NCAA. That's the only reason.
You could keep the championship game and pick the two best records or whatever, because I know the championship game makes a gazillion dollars, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but like you say, you could find other ways to derive those two teams. It doesn't have to be like, you know, and up until Georgia got halfway decent again, it was stupid anyway. Because it was the NFC versus the AFC back in the 80s when the Bears and the, you know, freaking Giants and the 49ers won every year and the AFC might as well not even show up, right? I mean, so yeah, absolutely, pods are the way to go. And if something good could come out of this horrible year, that would be a great thing to come out of it.
I agree.
Any other proposals you want to put on the table, Commissioner Ringer?
No, the only other two I want to say is that the SEC is talking to the Big 12 and the ACC about scheduling options just because they want to preserve the ACC games, like you talked about. And I think they're talking to the Big 12 because there's some games against Big 12 teams scheduled. And I think they're potentially looking at, you know, filling in some gaps with some of those teams. And the other option that's on the table, I think, down the road is – if things don't work out, it's playing in the spring.
They're not going to play in the spring. That just doesn't work at all.
I think it's a long shot, but I think it's on the table. I would tell you that high school football in Virginia, they voted today, they announced they're going to play in the spring.
That's because high school players mostly don't leave in January to go to their next level. I mean, you're going to be – the rosters will be decimated come January, February when you're trying to start having the season start. Your fifth-year seniors, your NFL leave-early guys, they're all going to be gone. It's just, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
I don't like it either, but I think it's – if that's the option, that may be the – saying that's the fallback position. That's
I got to say, though, the one that cracks me up is that the SEC is talking to the Big 12 about anything like this, because this is what always happens, right? We made the deal with them that if we both get left out of the playoff, we'll have our own little special bowl. The achievement bowl, the participation bowl between the SEC and the Big 12. And it's like the Big 12 is always the junior partner. They just can't wait to have this meeting with the SEC. I imagine the Big 12 is like the SEC is the big man on campus walking around in his Letterman jacket, and the Big 12 is like the nerdy dude. And like when the SEC comes over and says, hey Big 12, maybe we should get together sometime and do something fun. And Big 12 is running around, SEC wants to do something with me. Did you see that? SEC was talking to me. This is how I see the Big 12, honestly. They're so, it's cute. I just want to pat the Big 12 on the head and say, you know, it's cool that the SEC wants to hang out with you a little bit because you're the only thing available, honestly. We're not going to go, you know, you're not going to talk to the Pac-12. They're like smoking the pipe with the elbow pads on their, you know, cardigan sport coat or whatever. And the Big Ten just thinks they're too good for anybody. So, yeah, you got to go to the Big 12, of course. All right. You had a note, unless there's anything else you wanted to mention about scheduling.
No, and we could save this topic for next time.
Are you saying you want to schedule the scheduling topic for another time?
No, this topic after scheduling.
Oh, okay. We can. Okay. Well, then let's pause for just a moment. We have to thank the folks that enable us, the folks that cause all this, the folks that make it possible that you should have to suffer through this, and that would be our great patrons, the patrons who support us through Patreon.com. All you have to do to join their ranks is go to www.auwishbone.com. Okay, just go there, and you have access to all of our We Believe shows that have come out to the public so far. And you can also sign up to be a patron for as little as $1 a month. Here are the fine folks keeping us going currently. And by the way, I'm going to say this again because I don't want to offend anybody, and I certainly don't want to offend our fine patrons. Patreon has redone their manager page, and what it shows me is the current patron. So if you are signed up and I don't call your name, you might want to check with them, not with me, because all I'm looking at is what they tell me, okay? Because I know that there's several people that I feel like are missing, but that I didn't get a notice were no longer supporting us, and, you know, we appreciate it. But if you're not in, I just want to make sure everybody knows, if you're not included, you might want to check with Patreon, because they are not showing me your name. So here's what we have, the folks that are supporting us right now. Matthew Flowers, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, and Phil Amthor, along with Bart Lindsay and Bradley Blackman, William Morgan and Gary Grant, Brian Gray, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Steve Trawick, Logan Chilton, Tom Anderson, Richard Stevenson, William Glenn Matthews, Connor Davis, James Greenwell, Emmanuel Seaman, WDE Richie, Clinton Stewart and Christopher Stewart, hey guys, Phil Davis, John Otsuki, Preston Settle, Daniel Odom, AU Falling Up, Kevin Smith, Jeremy Minton, Winston Boddy, Theodore Geary, Reynolds Wolf, Joel Beckham, David Hegler, Mickey B, Shane Bailey, Jacob, and Robin Fleming. And by the way, the thing is also not showing me your entire names anymore, so I'm having to do the best I can and make sure I remember everybody's name. I've said them so many times, though, that I think I remember everybody's name. Like, for example, Ann Kangian, Clay Henson, George Gaston, Catherine England, John McCune, David Evers, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, and Rich Reimer. And now I have to click to page 2. They've redone the whole dang thing. Timothy, Chris Hilton, Di Bama, Sarah Hines, Darius Benton, Blake Heron, Kevin Mahan, Stephen Houston, Cato the Barner, Danny Flatt, Papa Todd, Kevin Kenoy, Don Zederman, Ross, Lane Middleton, Shannon Butson, Hugh Anderson. Let me pause here and in the pausing and remind you, our show is supported entirely by our listeners. You don't get any other commercials or anything like that during our entire show. You don't have to hear about chicken wings. You don't have to hear about male drugs or whatever. You don't have to hear about gambling. All you hear are the fine folks that help our show stay on the air, like Rob Morgan, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Mike Finley, Randall Walker, Russell Milling, Chris Thratch, Earl Ricks, Spanky, Chris, Jason Albrick, Russell Souther, Paul Bankson, Joseph Iliff, Stephen Wyatt, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Brandon Smith, Royce Alvarez, Trevor Johnson, David Smiley, Getting Close to the End, John, Donnie Reynolds, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, and Lawrence Kane, Darren Pyle, Chris Camo, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Stephen Schuster, Last Little Batch, James Taylor, Brant Rumble, Justin Bean, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Mitch Vijakana, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Again, if you didn't hear your name, talk to Patreon, not to me, because I will read every name that they tell me I should read. We appreciate every one of you so much. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And now,
thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister. It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Holy cow! Oh my God!
What have we got tonight, John?
All right, the topic that we didn't talk about that we're going to talk about in a future episode, and we want you to think about and let us know what your how you would do these things is, which position groups are you most or least worried about? That's what we're going to talk about next on.
Yep.
And so what we're asking you to do, you tell us on Twitter or by email which position group are you most worried about? Which position group are you least worried about?
I think I already know the answer to this, but I'm curious to see what everybody else says.
Okay.
All right.
So Jacob Fleming replied to our tweet and said, whenever Auburn can field the team, I'll be most concerned about defensive line, defensive backs, and offensive line, major unknowns in all three groups.
That's true, especially offensive line.
Yep. Our next question is from Paul Bankston, who emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com, and he says, what is your opinion a number of possible fans in the stands if and when the season starts? And I really hope it's when. I believe it should be all students at a minimum. You only get so many chances to be in the student section.
That's a good point, but they have to spread them out, and then that cuts into the other seats that are the money making seats a little bit. So yeah,
sure.
Tough.
But I mean, I love the idea of, like, if you could only have 20,000 people in the stadium or 30,000, whatever, just let it be all the students.
Yeah, yeah. You know it won't. I mean, you know the big money people, they'll certainly be up in their boxes. But yeah, but that would be nice. That would be cool. And it would, and conversely, it would really suck to play a game and not have the students there.
It's just going to – and the other thing, we're way down the road from this being a concern, but it really matters for home field advantage.
Yeah, well, right? Of course. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it turns into like the Formula One races with no audience where they're just driving around a track.
And – we have to go to Georgia and Alabama this year. So if they have to, if they can't have full crowds, if they can have skeleton crew crowds, then I'm like, well, yeah, too bad for them.
Oh, here comes Saban rule change number 8,950.
Yeah, it's going to be the excuse thing. We went to your stadium and it was loud. You came to our stadium and there was 10 people there.
It's not our fault that your 10 people didn't yell loud enough. You need to tell them to yell louder.
So I think that's out there. I think that's
going to God.
Matter.
10 fans in the Mississippi State Stadium all ringing the dang cowbells. That'd still be pretty loud.
One in each hand. So, all right, but if Alan Green came to you and said, Van, we can let 25,000 people in the stadium, you get to decide how to apportion it.
Yeah, I would have to probably.
Between like alumni, you know, paying, you know, big money boosters, students, and visiting fans, how would you apportion it out?
I would let most, if not all, the students in, and then I would apportion out the remainder, maybe like 10 to 15,000 students, and then depending on how many there usually are, and then let take the other 10,000 or whatever and divide that out proportionally among the alumni, faculty, the donors, all that.
No visiting fans.
Oh, well, yeah.
No, you know, I'm saying no. Don't give them a seat. Like, it's okay. If you have limited numbers.
Works for
They'll
me.
Get to see.
Steve Spurrier was practicing that 20 years ago. Yep. Put you up there at the top. Yep. You can sit on the flagpole. Enjoy the seat. Yep. Just drawing up some ball plays. Go ahead, John.
All right. Next question.
Yep.
This is funny, but it's painful also.
Uh-oh.
Dan Thompson says, who will Tuberville's running mate be in the 2024 presidential?
Oh, no. Well, he was pretty. It won't be Hugh Knoll. Give me that Knoll Springer. Knoll Springer. You have two vice presidents. Knoll Springer.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
Lord.
Yeah, could be Knoll and then Springer together.
Oh, man. Jackie Sherrill.
Not be Jackie Sherrill. won't be. What was his name? The spread offensive coach.
Oh, Tony Franklin.
It won't be Tony Franklin.
It won't be Tony. It might be Al Borges.
I can see Al Borges.
Tubbs Borges, 2024. Did you see, I read a good article that on USA Today about, it was from right before the shutdown started, so they were out still. It was about the campaign, and Tuberville goes into a barbecue place, and there are a bunch of Alabama fans, and he's like, oh, boy. And he walks over to them, and one of them looks at him and says, you caused me misery for like six straight years. And Tuberville says, I got rid of the and he goes, well, you got Saban now, you know. And he's like, yeah, but you made me sick for 6 years. And poor got Saban. And Tuberville goes, I ran off the guys in Saban's way. And the guy's like, yeah, you did. That's true. Thank you. I like that. That was a good answer.
That's it for listener questions.
All right. All right. Do we have any around the SEC? Is there anything worth SECing?
Something I forgot to say earlier around the Auburn side of the SEC is that, you know, I can't remember if we talked about this. We have two players transfer away.
Yeah.
Malik Miller and Zach Farrar. And we got a transfer in from a Kent State linebacker.
Oh, okay. Well, we lost Malik Miller and Zach Farrar, and we'd already lost Booby, right?
Booby.
Yes. We lost Booby. Yeah, Booby's not going to play for. So, yeah, we're losing a little bit, but we're bringing in a linebacker. So I feel like it's net going to work out okay. I mean, Farrar was never doing anything, and Booby just, you know.
Again, I think those two guys were at positions where they weren't going to play. I think that's
mm-hmm. good. Yeah. I could see, Whitlow didn't want to lose out in, like, his junior year to guys that are freshmen or whatever, and he would have probably. Yeah.
Yes.
So, that's right. That's right. I mean, we've said it before. He had a skill set. It just, I mean, he could be a dominant player at a lower team, lower division. He could be very good. But he just wasn't a between the tackles power, you know, power back. He was he looked like one, but it was deceptive. So he was more of a spin button guy, circle button. All right. Anything else for tonight? I think we've covered a lot of good stuff here.
Van, we went hither and yon in this podcast.
We did. And only a short period of time. It's only like but when I run this through the machine, it's going to only be about an hour at that. Not bad. In a brief hours podcast, the Auburn family got to hear some interesting, I think, and fun stuff tonight. Plus, I've got the title already cooked up now because of what we talked about. So I think we're good. I'm good.
I'm good.
All right. All right. Well, our time is up. We thank you for yours. Wargle, John.
Wargle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.